Ken, it's the Persec Podcast, episode number 6. How are you doing, man?
I'm doing great, Zach. I love that intro. Nice job.
Yeah, thanks, man. Is this episode 6 or is this episode 5?
This is episode 6.
Wow.
It's crazy. Nice.
I can't believe it. This has been, how is this, a month and 2 weeks of recording now?
Yeah, and we've been pretty consistent, too.
Yeah, that's the great part. I like consistency.
Yeah. Yeah, this is pretty much the longest thing I've ever done consistently, so it's good.
Wow. Wow.
So, Zach, today we kind of have like a controversial topic.
Ooh, controversy. Okay, let's hear it.
So, today we're going to talk about Google.
Google. The multi-billion dollar conglomerate, Google.
Yes, that's the one.
The colorful letters and the bright imagery when you go to their website, Google.
I'm just curious what their stock price is.
Google, who could do no wrong. Google, who is our Lord and Savior, who knows more about us than the FBI. Google, that one.
Google, as of today, the market cap is $649 billion. It's a lot of money.
Dude, so what were you telling me just before the show about the founders offering it to somebody else? Can you tell us that story real quick?
And
so we can just hear how depressing that number is to a certain someone.
So in case you ever had a bad day, let me provide you some context. So there used to be this site called Excite, like I'm excited to be here, and. Back in the very, very early days of school, or of Google, the two founders, Sergey and Larry, they felt that Google, their new project, was taking too much of their time. And so they offered to sell it to this web search company. And Excite was pretty big for its time. There were some old ones, Yahoo, Lycos, Excite, and a lot of others. I'm not quite that old, but I do vaguely remember some of it. They offered to sell this new company to them for $1 million, which is a lot of money. But it's not, it would have been a good investment. But the gentleman who turned them down later said that was a bad decision, which I think is quite possibly an understatement. So.
That's the most understated thing of the century, dude. Yeah. I mean, how do you, oh, man.
Well, there was a guy who sold one-third of stake of Apple for like $600. That guy is right up there too. So
so we hope that at this point in the podcast, you're feeling pretty good about yourself because, excuse me, you are not either of these people. You're probably driving your car to your workplace right now, or you're Chad sitting in your office. Hey, Chad. You're feeling pretty good about yourself. Well, hopefully you feel even better about yourself because you are not turning down what could have been not having to work for the rest of your life or your kids' lives or their kids' lives or their kids' lives.
I feel bad if I go to the taco joint and when they're not having a special. So I can't really imagine such things.
So your bar's pretty. Okay, got it. All right, Ken.
Yeah, so that's pretty good. I mean, I think the way I want to handle this a little bit is I want to talk about some good things about Google. You know, I don't want this to be a Google bash show. That may be my natural predilection, but I don't necessarily want that to be the case. You know, I think... So I'm 31 years old, right?
Okay.
I've been using the internet since the mid-90s. I have vague memories of those days. It used to be, I mean, it's quite a bit different now, obviously. But there are these, you know, websites that pretty much defined the early web. And we talked about some earlier, at least defined my early web experience. Yeah. So I remember sitting in, like, Lycos chat rooms when I was, like, I don't know, like 12 years old. That was before, like, chat rooms were, like, totally pervy. It was a lot of fun. There used to be this one called The Fishbowl. And I don't know why, but it was, like, super interesting to talk to all these people from around the world and also, like, have the anonymity of the internet, right? And so I might have been this, like, little nerdy, like, 10-year-old or whatever I was. But to them, you know, I could be anything I want. And that was before everybody realized that anything you hear on the internet is a lie. So
that's interesting, because I grew up, I'm 25 now. And
just a baby.
So actually, I don't remember the same internet you do. So for me, chat rooms have always been the rooms that, you know, my dad tells me not to go to, but which I went anyway.
Well, that's a different stage. I'm sure there were those too. Just like they probably weren't the ones that they promoted on their homepage back in the days. So, you know, if we go back a ways, you know, my favorite search engines back in the day, they were AltaVista, if you remember that.
Mm-hmm. Actually,
and
I do.
And there were Ask Jeeves. Ask Jeeves was a great search engine.
I actually do remember that one too. But I knew Google before, but I'd go to Ask Jeeves because it had the butler on it.
Yeah, no, it was. I mean, that got me through high school, right? Before Google was huge. And so that was kind of pretty much the early internet, you know. And the big fundamental change that Google brought to the, you know, industry was the concept of using links to determine relevance of content, right? So previously, it was all based upon keywords, right? And we all know how that worked out, like keyword stuffing, and you still see that on some sites now. You know, they'll have every possible keyword in it, and then they try to trick you to go in there, try to think you're relevant. And Google took a more analytical approach, and they said, okay, so if I'm... You know, if I'm searching for Zach's favorite topic of Pokemon, so one of the really strong signals that I'm going to interpret to see how good this content is whether or not people link to that as a source for Pokemon. And so they started crawling the web, looking to collect links, and they build the search engine off of that model. Whereas, you know, Yahoo for a long time, for example, that was manually curated, right? So you had these Yahoo lists, and so they would contain all these sites. And so if you wanted to look up, you know, football, you know, there'd be a site where you could go and pull up a list of sites and go through them one by one. And that was a very early version of what we might consider to be, you know, search. But Google changed that whole game, and I think that was a fundamental change in the web. It made it a lot more easy, accessible, and it really broadened the scope of it. And so I think that beyond anything else, should be what Google is remembered for. And they've done a lot of stuff since, but that fundamental premise there is changed everything.
Yeah, hey, Ken, that's great. Hey, I have a question for you. Why is my favorite thing always Pokemon? Why is it not like Thanksgiving dinner or Digimon or something else, Ken? Why is it always Pokemon?
I don't know, Zach. You have to answer that.
You know what my other favorite thing is, Ken?
What?
It's chocolate cake, which it was my birthday recently, Ken, and I did not see any chocolate cake from you.
Dude, I don't know, it was your birthday. Now I feel bad.
And
now, I should have at least jumped out of a cake for you.
And now they're...
like it's at least I can do.
And now there are at least three men we've talked about today who have experienced great disappointment.
Yes.
All right. So sorry for that that little tangent there. Please continue.
No. So you know, so early on, you know, Google was founded in 1998, and so their search was dominant. You know, the second big platform or Google service that I remember is Gmail, right? And I don't think people realize how huge Gmail was at the time. So I was one of the first. So Gmail came out April 1st, 2004, and I had my Gmail account in May of 2004. So I was pretty early on.
Whoa.
I have a pretty unique username at gmail.com that, you know, that you can't get nowadays. Now, I tried to create a new Gmail account not too long ago, and it required, like, I mean, it was just ridiculous on what was available. And that was a mind-blowing service. I mean, it started out and it gave you 1 gigabyte for mail, and that was enormous. Let me set some context. So this is 2005. It's my first year in the dorms. So my first year of college. And I had two email accounts. I had a Hotmail account and I had this Gmail account. And the Hotmail account, my total limit for all messages was 2 megabytes. And you had to log in every day, or you had to log in every 30 days. Otherwise, they would just flat out delete all of your email.
Whoa.
And so I had this Hotmail account, like, pared down to, like, the bare minimum. And the sad thing is it contained all my emails from, like, high school and junior high and everything. It was all in this 2 megabytes. And 1 month, I didn't log in. And it nuked them all.
No way.
Yeah. And so, like,
oh, dude.
All these, like, awkward emails I had, like, when I asked a girl out, when I asked a girl to prom over email.
Over
which is
email?
Something I did. Yeah.
If it makes you feel any better, I asked a girl to prom over text message, so...
I'm not sure which is worse. She said yes, but
so did mine.
So, like all the history's gone, you didn't have any of these problems with Gmail. Gmail did a lot of really innovative things. They made it was the first user interface for a web interface that I wanted to use.
Wow!
And they were
that's a big innovation.
Right, you know, everything before, and I still love my dedicated email apps, and frankly, I use them now, which we'll get to that. But at the time, I mean, it was groundbreaking. And so, you know, I think that that's probably accelerated their growth more than anything else. I recently read there's over 1 billion Gmail accounts in use now, which is a huge number.
Holy cow.
So, you know, Gmail did a lot of innovative things. You know, when the first mobile phones came out, they supported this thing. I forget what they called it, but they basically emulated Microsoft's ActiveSync protocol. So you could set up your Gmail account as an Exchange account, and you'd get, like, push mail and calendar events, right? I mean, that was huge at the time. That was something that was only supported on these, you know, enterprise-level systems, and Gmail just pushed it out to everybody. I mean, it was huge.
Wow. You know, actually, to think about it, I mean, Gmail was rolled out 3 years before even smartphones were rolled out. I mean, to think about, this was the day of the Motorola Razr, and it's 1 gigabyte in an email, and this is mind-blowing. And nowadays, it's like Google gives you, like, a flipping terabyte right off the bat.
Yeah, no, I mean, there's some huge, you know, the whole entire game has changed. But a lot of that is due to Google. I mean, I don't know where we would be. We might still be at, you know, 2 megabyte limits if it wasn't for them.
And still on the iPhone 4.
You know, and they came into a market that was entrenched. You know, you had Yahoo Mail, which was a dominant player, and then you had Hotmail as well. They pretty much cleaned up.
Yeah, Yahoo Mail was actually my first, and I still have that account. It was made in 2005, and I absolutely refuse to go back and search the history on that. Oh, dude.
Yeah.
I can't believe it's 12 years old now.
Some things are best left in the past.
Oh, yeah. Except for Pine.
Yeah, everybody needs a little more Pine.
Pine.
Now, that's an email client, Zach.
Oh, I didn't think it was until you showed me, and it's an email client. Mm. But we'll talk about that, I guess, a little later.
So, I just think that we need to, you know, we just need to give some appreciation for what they brought. And then, you know, they later began to acquire a lot of services. So, like, they acquired YouTube, and they began to roll out, you know, other industry-changing tools. You know, one of the things that I used heavily, I think a lot of people did, was Google Reader, right? Their RSS solution. I mean, that changed the game. And so, you know, previously you had some clients that would go out and aggregate these RSS feeds, but when Google Reader came in, it provided, like, this dominant syncing solution that just eliminated any uncertainty and made it super easy to use.
I'm surprised Google has done so much in these different fields, man. I actually didn't realize that Gmail was such a groundbreaking thing or Google Reader. Like, it's amazing that they just constantly innovated. I mean, search engine was their start. It's just kind of blows my mind a little bit.
Right. Well, and then they went through and revitalized, and offered all these free tools. They basically just gave them away. It's like Google Analytics,
Wow.
I mean, it's just offered for free, right? And yeah. You know, they gained some benefit, which we're going to talk about. But, you know, largely, it was just a service to the internet. And so it brought them a tremendous amount of goodwill. And I think it's a... I was just looking this up. So Google Analytics was another one of their mergers. So they acquired a company called Urchin in 2005.
Urchin.
And so...
Urchin. Okay.
And so, like a sea urchin.
Sounds vaguely familiar.
And so that was some interesting... you know, so that really set them the scope for the modern internet. And, you know, they made many of these acquisitions and product introductions over time. And they've also been really aggressive in taking them out, which we're going to talk about, too. They're certainly not afraid to, you know, test a product, and if it doesn't work, they'll pull it, too. So, like, regardless of whether or not you're a Google fan or not, you can't deny what Google has done. And so we wanted to start the discussion just with some appreciation for their contributions to the industry.
Thank you, Lord and Savior Google.
Yes.
You are forever within our prayers.
But there's also another side. And so that's what we want to talk about today.
Ooh. This is the side I'm not aware of.
Google started out as this little, you know, as this innovative search engine company. And they did extraordinarily well. And they became incredibly profitable based upon their search ads, right? So when you search for a term, you're offered an ability to buy that ad for a given amount of money and, you know, gain some ranking. And that's pretty much an honest business. So I ran a significant Google AdWords or paid search campaign for a number of years. And we made a ton of money off of it. So I don't think it's, you know, we didn't really do anything shady either. We just were trying to, you know, introduce our products, to our customers. And as far as I can tell, we had a reputable business, and Google AdWords helped us a lot. We heavily used their analytics. We ran on their Google Apps, their commercial email platform. And, you know, it was during that experience that I first began to think about my relationship with Google and like what that meant. And I began to realize that I, at the time, this guy who was spending, you know, like $100,000 a year on Google AdWords, I was Google's customer, right? That was my dollars that were contributed to Google's bottom line. It wasn't, you know, the guy using Gmail or the guy using search. It was me, right? I was the one paying the bills. And so I began to think a lot about incentives, right? What is Google's incentive to offer these applications and offer these services for essentially free? And that's where I began to get a little weirded out, right? As good as Gmail was, as innovative as that was, like, what is that relationship? What is my relationship with Google? What does it mean? What are the benefits? And what are the costs? You know, there's that old saying that there's no such thing as a free lunch. And I mean, it's really true. What do I give up for the convenience of, you know, having all of my email in one place or for getting the fastest and most accurate search engine results? And so that is the root of my discomfort when it comes to, you know, comes to Google.
Hmm. Are there any alternative, because you mentioned it, are there any alternatives to Google AdWords? I mean, is there really...
So you can buy ads on other search engines, right?
Hmm. But they have to be provided by that search engine, right? Because those ads are appearing up as a result of that search. Got it.
Right. So you could go to Bing, and you could be like, I want to buy this keyboard. Or like, there's other search engines like DuckDuckGo, which I use personally. You know, and they have an ad-based product. And I don't think search-based ads are necessarily inherently evil. I do think that there is some extension of these search-based ads. And the tracking and the analytics that they can glean from the performance. And that can begin to get a little creepy. And so, you know, I have a lot of Apple products. I'm an Apple fan. I make no secret of it. They're not perfect, but, you know, it's my product of choice. I feel like I have a really clear understanding of what that relationship is, right? I give them money, and they give me a product or a service, right? And I feel like that exchange is transparent and clear and easily defined. With Google, I get a little nervous. And perhaps some of it's unjust, perhaps because I have the tinfoil wound a little too tight. But I think when I get free services, I just get to wonder, like, what am I actually paying? And I would rather, and frankly, and this goes back to that whole, like, convenience versus security versus, like, cost thing we've talked about. I would rather pay dollars than pay with some other unknown currency, right? Whether that be my personal data, whether it be my personal privacy, whether it been, like, influence on, you know, influenced by advertisers, right? All these things. I prefer my relationships to be a little clearer.
Clear. So, like, basically spelled out for you. So if you're going to use a search engine, it basically says for you, hey, by the way, we're going to learn more about you than most small governments would in stuff.
So let me give you a really concrete example of this. So it's recently announced that Google is tracking 70% of offline purchases.
What?
Yes. Google is tracking 70% of offline purchases. Like, you go to the store and you buy something, right? Now, they do that by collecting credit card data. And with just a few pieces of information, they can target with a high degree of certainty what you bought. And so it's entirely possible for you to run a Google ad for a product, let's say a pack of Pokemon cards, right? And you go to this, and you go down to like your 7-Eleven or whatever, and you buy like an iced tea and a pack of Pokemon cards, that Google will pick up on that and can contribute and can attribute that conversion to your AdWords campaign.
Wow.
And that is where that's where I start to freak out a little bit. I think we talked about this once when we're talking about encryption, right? But, you know, if I committed some crime and I was going to be, like, deposed or evidence was to be gathered against me, I think I would rather have somebody, like, read my brain than, like, be able to read my mind than have access to all of this digital forensics that we have. Like, I might have a shot at forgetting something, right? Like, I might forget where I was 19 Thursdays ago, right? But my phone and my Google searches won't. And they can provide a level of context and granularity that is unparalleled. There's never been anything like it before.
Wow. Would you say that Google knows more about you than the FBI?
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure Google knows more about me than I do myself.
Wow.
Google has access to all sorts of analytics that can, you know, use to predict behavior. Talk about another company I don't particularly like, Facebook. They've actually done studies to manipulate behavior and manipulate moods. And I think that's, that is going a little too far. And so personally, that's beyond my cost versus privacy versus convenience threshold that I'm willing to give.
You know,
that's why
I will say, Ken, that I feel like your tin hat is on a little too tight. And then sometimes you just make so much sense and use just the right amount of facts that I feel that I may need to take that hat from you and wear it myself.
Well, I think it's creepy.
It is, actually, to be honest.
I think it's a little creepy. Now, I think in one respect, like, Google is a for-profit corporation. They answer to shareholders, right? I think their motives are relatively clear in a lot of instances, right? They're interested in making money. They're interested in collecting data on you so they can serve more accurate ads. The more accurate ads you receive, the more likely you are to convert, to actually buy or, you know, obtain that service or product. And that means you're more valuable to Google as a, you know, as a eyeball, right, for their advertisers to market to. But then there's this whole other side that is slightly more concerning to me, right? And this is where I get a little, I'm going to take back my tinfoil hat. So recently, in the last few days, Google's announced some changes to their YouTube platform where they're going to begin to, if you search for a topic that is like radical or perhaps, you know, racially motivated or, I don't know what the word to say, bigoted in some sense, or like filled with hate. Like if you start searching for like, you know, ISIS, sympathizing videos, Google isn't going to in turn show you videos that counteract those radical, thoughts. Right.
Wow.
And so like, if you know, if I'm like, holy if I'm crap. Google, if I'm YouTube, I'm at YouTube for, I'm at Google for a video that shows how to join ISIS, right? For example. And YouTube will respond with like a video expounding upon the terrorist group's like evil, side, right? And try to break down like my desire to join. Now, I don't have much sympathy for ISIS, right? So don't get me wrong. And like the internet is like a terrible place, right? It's full of hate and full of people who, you know, are bigoted and are trying to make lives terrible for everyone. I have no sympathy for them. What concerns me is the whole slippery slope effect, right? What happens when Google decides that, you know, being religious is a bad thing, right? Or what happens when Google decides that, you know, buying certain products is not in your best interest, and then begin to subconsciously try to change how you think. I think that is another line that's being clearly overstepped. And furthermore, I think it's a line that's not easily explained by financial motivations. And so I begin to wonder, like, what is the true intent?
Let me ask, and I apologize if this is a bit earlier than you're ready to talk about, but like, what are my alternatives? What do I do? I mean, Google seems like such a, you know, a big conglomerate. I mean, I feel like I'm always going to go to YouTube. I feel like I'm always going to go to Google search engine. I mean, what else do I do?
Well, I think that's a really like good point, right? So, I mean, if Google strays outside of your comfort zone, I mean, I don't think for a lot of things that you have all that many like well-known options. Now, the internet is a huge place. It's like full of you know, enterprising individuals who are trying to make competing services. So I think for most instances you can find alternatives. YouTube is especially troublesome because it has some sort of critical mass effect there. And so the more popular it gets, the more likely it's going to be where videos are. If you want to follow Casey Neistat, for example, I don't know where else you do it other than YouTube, right?
Hmm. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say other services, right, such as search and such as email, you have some alternatives there. And so, you know, if that trade-off doesn't fit, then you might find some solace elsewhere. But they're probably not going to be free. And they're probably not going to be as good. And that that again comes back to, you know, your risk preferences. My email is through Fastmail. Highly recommend them. They're a great host. But they cost money. So I pay, you know, a chunk of money every year to have my email hosted there. And their spam protection is not nearly as good as Google's. So that's a real cost that I pay, both, you know, tangibly and intangible. Costs that I pay, and so that's a choice that I made to no longer, you know, use Gmail.
Well, what about I mean, of course I have like an ad blocker installed. You know, does that help in any way? Or what about like script? What do you call it? They're like script blockers.
Yeah, I think that helps a lot. You know, one option, so pretty much, I don't know, most sites you go to will have Google Analytics tracking code on. I don't know the numbers there, but I would guess a majority of them do. And so, you know, you have an option to just go flat out block those ads or block that from communicating with Google. And you can certainly communicate or, you know, block ads on Google as well. And it blocks some of the tracking, doesn't block all of it. You know, if you're signed into Google, while you're doing Google searches, I'm sure it still keeps data on you. I think that there's some interesting technologies that are coming out to block a lot of that tracking. But Google is so integrated. You know, if you have a Gmail account and you're signed into it, you're going to give up a lot of privacy. And they have some real information about you then that they can, you know, they can use to triangulate who you are and what your motives and.
That's just a little creepy, Ken. That's just a little creepy. Habits.
So one thing I want to give Google credit, and this happened in the last couple of weeks. Used to be Gmail would actually scan your email. They would read your email to serve you ads.
That's also gross.
Yeah, it was pretty gross. And Microsoft had like a heyday with it. They had this campaign called Scroogled.
Scroogled.
And you could buy like t-shirts and stuff. I don't think it did all that well, but they were pretty proud of it. And so what it would let you do is it would let, it was just trying to communicate that like, hey, you know, Gmail reads your emails, which isn't really true. I mean, it was machine scanned, right? No dude was like, you know, reading through Zach's love letters, but it was still a kind of a creepy issue. And so to their credit, they have stopped that practice recently. And so I think that was a really positive sign. What they also said though, again, this is a interesting show. They also said they had enough data on you already that they didn't need to read your email. So I don't.
Oh man, come on!
I don't know. Yeah.
It's like so, it's like, hey, you know, we're not gonna poison you, but you're already dead.
So I think there's some interesting things there. Now, I mean, when it comes down to it, though, as we talked about, Google is incredibly convenient. You can have one Google account and pretty much use that as your digital world, right? Pretty much the only thing, I mean, they have had products that failed, right? Google Plus, their social network, wasn't big.
Yep.
They've had a bunch of other services like Google Wave. Like, to be honest, I don't even know what that does or did.
They had, you know, Google Glass that... They did that for just a tiny amount of time and then they stopped. But I don't think they're stopping that permanently. But
no, they just came out with a kind of a new one.
Oh,
I think that's going to actually have some interesting implications. You know, I'll tell you one story. We were talking earlier today about PubCon. It's like social media and internet marketing trade show conference that they do. And it's Vegas, and I think they do one in New Orleans too. Anyway, I went to it when I was working for this previous company in more of an internet marketing role. And it was the first time I ever seen Google Glass. They hadn't been out very long. And I walked into the bathroom and was standing at a urinal, and the guy next to me came in wearing Google Glass.
Oh.
It was like the it was like the creepiest thing ever. Oh, and I was like, you know, this is going to change everything, right? This is gonna change it all.
I'm gonna review that footage later.
Yeah, like I mean, it was just weird. And so I mean, again, technology, it always makes us uncomfortable, right? Typically we adapt. You know, I think I'm turning into like one of those old people now that, you know, it's like, give me my QWERTY keyboard and shut up. You know, like I don't think I'm that far from it. You know I'm like the guy. I remember installing Windows from 67 floppy disks. They were held together with a rubber band, you know, like, so, I mean, you got to take my criticism with a grain of salt. Like people who are, you know, 10 years younger than I am, I'm sure they don't have the same concerns, but I mean, that's why this podcast is for, you know, people who are, you know, not quite normal, but,
we have a guy who is the guy who screams tinfoil when he walks in the room, and you have a guy who plays Pokemon.
Yeah, exactly. That's a match made somewhere. So I think there's some, you know, interest. There's a lot of, it comes down to, you know, some soul searching that you have to do. Are you comfortable with it? For me, like whatever that risk is, I don't, it's not worth the trade off to me. Google has some tools. You can actually go into your Google account and you can say, show me all the data you have on me, and they can provide some of that to you, and you can delete it or you can archive it. But if you look at in the totality of Google services, right, they have mapping, they have a Google image, you know, storage, Google Photo storage, which uses machine learning to categorize your photos. They have access to all of your search engine queries. They you know, have access to your inbox. They can look at what you bought and how much. I don't know if they do it or not, but they at least have that capability. And they can build a great picture of you. Maybe you have an Android phone and they have access to that database or to your operating system. It's just a little too much.
Just a little bit.
Just a little too much. And I think that if these services were from separate companies, it wouldn't nearly be as troublesome. Right? You could say there's some separation here. Like, I don't worry about Apple giving Microsoft my, you know, search engine history. It's just not a thing. But, you know, with the convenience comes this great, comes some concerns. And so, you know, that's what we want to do.
Yeah, exactly. And I think we're doing, I think so far, Ken, you brought up a lot of good concerns. Because honestly, before this, I'm like, Google, you know, it's okay. And now after this podcast, I'm already kind of considering maybe switching, maybe taking more steps to not let them have as much information about me as they do. So
yeah, so yeah, let's talk about that real quick. So let me tell you like my tinfoil strategy here. Okay.
I go to the store and I buy that. So I don't buy the cheapest tinfoil. No, it never works.
No, you got to get a good layer, right? Otherwise, the waves get through. You know, so I have like 6 Google accounts, right? So I'm by no means a, you know, total absolutist when it comes to using their or not using their products. I do use them far less than I used to, and most of those accounts are legacy. I have a YouTube account. I like watching YouTube videos. I keep track of subscriions primarily through that YouTube account, and so it's nice. I can sit in my TV or sit in my couch and pull up a YouTube, pull up my YouTube subscriptions, and watch YouTube videos. That's probably the biggest source. Biggest thing I use for Google at the moment. Occasionally, like if Apple Maps fails, and it's only done it like a couple of times, and one of the time Google Maps couldn't figure it out either. So I think they're pretty close. Probably not in all regions, but certainly in the U.S. where I live. I'll use Google Maps occasionally. And let's see. And occasionally I'll use Google Search. So I use DuckDuckGo. I really like DuckDuckGo. DuckDuckGo has a great product. Is it as good as Google's? No, of course not. They're a lot smaller, they have a lot less resources, and they've been doing a lot less amount of time. I mean, they've been doing a lot shorter amount of time. They're just not quite there yet. And Google continues to advance, and you know, I don't think DuckDuckGo can keep up with them. But frankly, like I don't run into an issue. Like DuckDuckGo has this great system called Bangs, right? And so it lets you you can put a prefix in your search query. So for example, like if I wanted to look up the Grand Canyon and I wanted to read about it in Wikipedia, I could hit !W for Wikipedia and then my search query, and that would bring it up.
Oh, nice.
And that also works with Google services. So occasionally there's a query that I don't like. I just add !G to it and it sends me through the TLS encrypted Google search page, and I don't stay logged into my browser, so Google may be able to track some information on me, but probably not a lot. I use an ad blocker. It blocks
which one?
What am I using now? It depends on what browser.
Because there's like uBlock, there's AdBlock Plus. AdBlock Plus, though, people have kind of dived away from because I think they got. I think they got bought out or something, and so now they only block some ads and not all.
Yeah, so a lot of these things have. There's been a lot of change in the ad blocking arena. I encourage you to be careful. Ghostery was a long favorite of mine, but they were just bought out. That creeped me out, so I've installed that from all my machines. I use AdBlock on Safari, and then I use uBlock Origin on Chrome.
Yeah, there you go, uBlock Origin.
One other thing we haven't talked about at all is editing your host file.
Oh, yeah.
So every PC or every computer has what's called a host file. And I don't know how to describe it shortly, succinctly. It's basically a file that allows you to modify certain things. And so you can specify where certain links go. And so there's an old trick that you can do. You can go to... you can send a web page to 127.0.0.1, which is home, right? And so, for example, I don't use Facebook. Facebook creeps me out. That's maybe an episode for a different show. But any link that is directed to Facebook gets redirected to my own computer, and so it just shows up as not found, right? And so in my host file is a facebook.com/127.0.0.1 entry. And so you can use the host file to block certain things. Now, you have to know what you're doing, otherwise you can't break your computer. For example, I'm running the macOS beta because I'm an idiot. And for whatever reason, it wasn't updating from beta to beta, and I finally pinned it down. It was an entry in my host file, and so I had to track that down and figure out what was going on. So you can cause some damage. It's not permanent, but just be careful. There's a great website. If you Google someone who cares host file, you'll get a great file that's been built by someone else. And there's also instructions on how to change it and everything. And basically what you can do is you can just paste this in, and it blocks a lot of like shock porn, a lot of tracking. And if you're on Windows 10, it blocks a lot of Windows' phone home telemetry systems. And so it's useful for a privacy perspective. I will say on Windows 10, there's some debate on whether or not it fully, whether or not the OS itself can bypass the host file. I don't know enough on that to comment. If so, that's creepy, Microsoft. Knock it off. And then, yeah, the other thing I recommend doing is, you know, doing some other things to obscure your identity. You know, maybe not stay signed into your Google account all the time if you're going to use it. I wouldn't stay signed into Chrome. I personally don't use Chrome. I think it's slow, has a lot of good features, but I think you could find them in other browsers. That choice is ultimately up to yours. It is a fine browser. It's a lot, certainly a lot better than Internet Explorer, if those are your two alternatives. If that's your alternative, use Chrome. But just be careful. And, you know, come up with your own internal evaluation of what Google provides versus what it costs, and make the right choice for yourself.
Well, I think I've made my choice, Ken. And my choice is I will wait for the... I will just throw away my computer, throw away my internet, write books, and live like a Victorian-age gentleman. I'm going to grow a long beard, which I can't. I'm going to drive a buggy, a horse and buggy.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
And give up after a little bit of time and just deal with the fact that Google happens to know more about me than I do.
Right. Yeah, there's some other things too. Yeah, and like we didn't even get to the creepier parts, right? Like, what happens if you have a Google Home assistant in your house that's always listening, or their what do they call it, the Nest thermostat?
Yep,
that just freaks me out. So, I mean, there's just all these things, right? You know, I have some Amazon Echoes in my house, and they freak me out. I think I'm gonna get rid of them. And again, like the tinfoil thing. But it's just, the potential is there.
What started all this, Ken? What started this tinfoil side of you?
Well, I think I've always been like it. You know, I think I was going to school and studying economics, right? It really began to, like, wonder, you know, what are these competing trade-offs? And really understand. I mean, look, I don't mean to be cynical, but Google offers a service to us, to people, because they make more money on it than what it costs, right? I mean, that's like the fundamental economic assumption behind all business. Now, there's exceptions to this, but I don't believe Google is that exception. Right? Google's doing this to make money. They do this to collect data. They do this to, you know, sell ads. And, you know, and to make a profit. And I think we should be aware of that. I would much rather, like I said, I'd much rather pay in dollars than with my personal information. And I get that that is weird, and I acknowledge that. But it's a choice that I make.
Oh, and honestly, you know, that's honestly kind of a good choice. I mean, if I could pay a little bit out of my pocket just to guarantee that, you know, everything I have belongs to me and isn't known by someone else, then yeah, I'm okay with that. I mean, it depends on the dollar amount, really. I mean, there is a point where I think maybe an amount is too high, and I'm okay giving up a little bit of my personal information. you know, if it doesn't break the bank. But, you know, honestly, that's an interesting idea, and maybe we might see that come forward. Maybe somebody will invent a service that's kind of like that, but, you know, I don't know.
Right. Well, and the other, you know, I think that's a valid point. And, you know, one thing you briefly touched on there is that for a lot of these services, any competition has long since been, you know, basically destroyed through Google's dominance. And I'm not crazy. I don't care who the company is. I don't think any part of the internet should be controlled that tightly. And so, you know, for all intents and purposes, Google controls search. When I was, you know, doing my internet marketing stuff, I didn't buy Bing keywords. I bought Google keywords. They weren't, like these other search engines, they weren't worth enough to even consider. And so I think that, you know, having a single source of any of these elements is potentially very harmful. And all it takes is some disruption or a change in business model, and this whole internet can be set aside. Or this whole internet thing can change. You know, we talked about Google Reader, the RSS reader. In 2012, they shut that down. They just decided we're going to yank the plug. And that caused a lot of damage. I lost all my subscriptions. I had to find another site that offered RSS aggregation. It basically threw entire industries in upheaval. And just because Google didn't want to support it anymore. And that's fine, right? That's their right to do that. But at the same time, you know, after they basically destroyed all the competition. And so when they announced they're shutting it down, it was only then that they were able to create viable products with the death of Google Reader looming. And so, I don't know. There's things I like about the internet. I don't want it to go away. I don't want it to change for the worse. I don't want it to be overly monetized. And that's why I stay away from Google. So.
That is why we are here, to talk about your personal security. Maybe one day we won't have to talk about this. Maybe one day it'll just be something we can just rely on always having, but I don't know. That day may never come, but that's okay. That's why there's people like us.
Yeah, and again, like, this wasn't intended to be a rant, right? It's just, you know, I think a lot of times people use these things that are, use solutions that are easy and convenient and cheap, and, you know, as a good friend of mine used to say, the path of least resistance makes both men and rivers crooked. So, sometimes, you know, the easiest way is not necessarily the hardest. So,
it's true.
With that profound statement, Zach.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to think on that for couple hours, man. You really got me. I'm not gonna play Pokemon after this. I'm gonna think about that.
Yeah, no, that's good. A real zinger. No. So
no, that was good. I like that. Yeah, dude. I got nothing else for final thoughts. I just think at the end of the day, I have high hope that somebody at Google will see the monopoly error of their ways and perhaps take steps towards fixing that. I usually believe in the good of people, but, you know, maybe that's not always the case. So we'll see.
Well, I think the pendulum swings quite a bit.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we saw Microsoft as the dominant force for years and years and years. And before them, it was IBM. And so, you know, these companies, they have the rise, and they also sunset as well. And so I think that, you know, the market will ultimately determine, and perhaps we're wrong. You know, it's entirely possible that, you know, sentiments such as this are not what the market supports. And so, you know, these things that we talk about, these principles of privacy and security, will slowly be eroded away even further. And maybe some help with our own government. Thank you very much. But, you know, what the people demand, the people will get for the most part. And so, you know, if you're so inclined, vote with your wallet and vote with your feet. You know, we can just keep taking these small steps together to improve our personal security. So
sounds good to me, man. Well,
all right, Zach.
Ken, as always, this was a good podcast, and I think I'll be seeing you next week, as is our usual consistent schedule, right?
Indeed. It was always a pleasure, Zach. Thank you very much.
Ken, very great. Thank you, man. We'll see you.